Kate launched herself forward off the wall and across a 6-foot gap between the construction project and the roof of a low building. She landed, stumbled a few steps, and took off, not even looking back. The message was clear. Keep up or get lost. August took a breath, gripped the violin case, and leaped. He cleared the roof's edge and slid, scrambling upright as Kate disappeared behind a rooftop structure. August followed, and when he rounded the corner, she caught his shoulder, pressing him back against the wall beside her, out of the line of sight.
"You do this often?" he whispered. "Jumping between buildings, running over rooftops?"
Kate raised a blonde brow. "You don't?" She almost smiled, though it could have been a grimace. When she leaned forward, he could see the jagged line the Maokai's teeth had cut into her shoulder. August scanned the buildings.
"Where are we?"
"Outer edge of the red."
"I have an access point near the seam. If we can get to South City..."
"We?" She pushed open the rooftop door and started down the stairs. "You saved me, I saved you. The way I see it, we're even." August frowned.
"I'm not leaving you.
And I'm not going to Flynn.
We could protect you."
She let out a sound like a laugh, but colder. "Oh, I'm sure." He followed her down the stairs.
"Fine, don't believe me. But it isn't safe here."
"It isn't safe anywhere," she snapped, the truth welling up. "I can't go home. Harker Hall is in the center of the red, and whether or not my father's there, Sloane will be. And..." August caught the scent of blood and pressed his hand over her mouth, tilting his head toward the street. Kate started to protest, but must have seen the answer in his eyes because she went silent. He strained, trying to make out the voices.
"Not in the building. Call it in. Check the cameras. Signal."
August and Kate stood in the stairwell, perfectly still, until the voices trailed away, blending with the hum of engines and the other city sounds. When he lowered his hand, Kate wiped her face with the back of her sleeve. "What did they say?" she asked. "Give me your phone." She dragged the cell from her pocket and handed it over. August set it on the stairs and crushed it underfoot. Kate scowled. "Necessary?" she whispered.
"Couldn't hurt," he whispered back.
"Is all of North City wired?" Kate nodded. "Cameras on almost every block."
"Almost?"
Kate considered him. "There are some exceptions."
"I don't suppose you've memorized them all."
Kate raised a brow. "I've only had a week." August's spirit sank, and then her lips twitched, the barest edge of a smile, tired but knife sharp. "I got through the ones in the red." August straightened.
"If you want to run, I won't stop you. But first, help me find another phone."
The sun had dipped below the skyline and the city was beginning to fold in on itself. Not like in South City, where everything was boarded up and everyone shrank inside their armored shells. But even here, the streets were emptying, as anyone without Harker's protection headed home, and even those with medallions went inside. The restaurants and bars were filled with people brave enough to venture out but not linger on the sidewalks, which meant that, even avoiding cameras, every moment they were in the street, they were standing out. August followed Kate through a network of streets and into a nearby cafe. She beelined for the bathroom and came out a few minutes later wearing someone else's clothes and holding someone else's cell phone. She handed him back the Colton jacket.
"Hope you don't mind. I got a little blood on it."
August wrinkled his nose.
"Thanks," he said, shrugging it on over his polo.
She passed him the cell, and they hovered in the dark hall between the kitchen and the tables and out of the line of the restaurant's camera as he dialed. After two rings, someone answered,
"FTF.
It caught him off guard. He was so used to calling from his own cell, which went directly to the family line. But they'd gone over this, along with every other fallback and safety net before he started at Colton.
"Flynn," said August. "Code?" 7183.
"Status?"
"Red."
"Hold."
The line went silent, and August was starting to worry they'd dropped the call when he heard a click, and then Henry's voice, sharp with worry.
August? August, is that you?
His chest tightened. It's me, Dad. Something crossed Kate's face at the use of the word.
Where are you? What's going on? Are you all right?
I'm okay, but something's happened and I need to-
August,
cut in another voice. Leo. Leo, I need to talk to Henry right now. Put him back on.
Are you alone?
His brother's voice was low and steady, his will as solid as a wall. The answer tumbled out before August could stop it.
No. Who is with you?
Kate, he answered, trying to focus. Leo, listen, someone tried to kill her at Colton today. They killed others, too. It was two Malkai, but they tried to make it look like us. We both managed to get away, but they're still looking for her, and I think... Leave her. The rest of August's words snagged in his throat.
What? Leave her and come home.
No, I'm not doing that. He could hear Henry say something in the background, and he desperately wanted Leo to put his father back on the line, but the other Sunai kept talking.
You've acted beyond your orders and compromised your position. Your identity is now clearly forfeit, so our priority has to be protecting you.
And what about her? He snapped. He could feel Kate's attention trained on him.
You are more important, said Leo smoothly. Now where are you?
The question hit August like a punch. He had to hold the phone away from his face to keep from answering. He forced air into his lungs. He didn't want to tell him that, and he wasn't entirely sure why.
Where are you?
Repeated his brother, the patience evaporating from his voice. August bowed his head and clenched his teeth, but he could feel the answer clawing its way up his throat. So he hung up. What the hell was that about? Asked Kate as he stared down at the phone.
August?
He shook his head. There had been something in Leo's voice, something he didn't like. He thought of the way his brother spoke of Kate, as if she deserved to suffer for Harker's crimes just because she was his daughter. As if crimes were something that could be passed on like a genetic trait.
I can't take you south, he said grimly.
Great, said Kate, plucking the phone out of his hand. Well, that's settled. But it wasn't. Nothing was settled. Everything was falling out of order, out of balance. August closed his eyes to clear his mind and heard Kate typing something rapidly into the phone.
What are you doing?
I have to get a message to my father. Let him know it was a setup.
What if Sloane sees it?
Kate showed him the screen. It was a jumble of letters with dashes scattered between. When we first came back to the city, after the truce, he taught me a cipher.
That's sweet.
Hey, kids, said a waitress. You gonna have to order something or go?
Sure thing, said Kate. We're just waiting on a friend. The woman didn't look like she believed it, but she let them be.
What does it say? Asked August. Your message.
Kidnapped by vicious Sunai. Please start a war in my name. August frowned. The bells over the front door chimed. Relax. It's just my name and the cell number. The smell and the sound hit him at the same time. He caught his breath.
Kitchen.
What? Asked Kate, disabling the phone's GPS.
Are you hungry?
August shook his head.
Go toward the kitchen, he whispered.
Gasps were moving through the restaurant. Kate twisted toward the noise, but August pulled her back into the corridor.
Everyone,
said a voice like wet marbles in the main room. A Malkai.
Please stay in your seats. You aren't supposed to come in here, said the manager. We have a deal and...
The clean snap of a breaking neck. Chairs scraping and stifled cries as people began to rise.
Stop,
ordered the Malkai.
Sit down.
August cheated another step toward the kitchen. His violin case knocked into a folding tray, nearly toppling it, but Kate lunged and caught the edge before it fell. The moment they were through the kitchen doors, August turned and shoved some kind of cooking tool through the handles.
Hey,
shouted one of the chefs with a booming voice.
You can't be back here!
The sound echoed against the stainless steel, and August grabbed Kate's hand and ran. They reached the back door just as the first Maokai slammed into the one on the restaurant side. The barricade held long enough for them to burst out into the alley.
We can't stay here, said Kate, scanning for cameras.
Is there anywhere we can stay? Asked August, pushing a dumpster in front of the doors. Kate shook her head, but she was already pulling him out of the alley and around the corner, putting as much space between them and the restaurant as possible. As they reached the street, she looped her good arm through his and pulled him close, nestling into his side. August startled but didn't pull away. He didn't understand at first, and then he did. The only people on the street were walking in pairs or groups, and suddenly the two of them looked less like frantic fleeing teens and more like a young couple. Eyes that might have snagged slid off. August bent his head casually as if sheltering her from a breeze.
We have to get out of the red until I hear from my father, she said.
We, he noticed. And how are we supposed to do that?
I don't know, said Kate, leaning against him. Every building in North City has cameras, and soon the streets are going to be swarming with Maokai, and God only knows how many are now working for Sloane.
And then, all of a sudden, she stopped.
What is it?
She spun on him, eyes wide. The Maokai are working for Sloane.
I thought we already knew that.
Right. But that means we just have to go somewhere the Maokai won't. August opened his mouth to ask where in North City the Maokai could possibly refuse to go. But then he followed her gaze down, down to the ground beneath their feet, to the curl of steam rising from a grate in the pavement.
Oh, hell.
Chapter 3
Just for the record, said August as they climbed down the pipes and bars into the bowels of the subway tunnel. I think this is a terrible idea.
The Maokai hate the Corsi, said Kate, dropping the last few feet to the tunnel floor. And from what I've seen, the feeling is mutual.
Yes, well, August hit the ground beside her. The Sunai aren't fond of either of them.
You wanted to come along, said Kate. Secretly relieved he had. The thought of doing this alone made her ill. Her shoulder ached with every breath, and August might be a monster, but at least he didn't want her dead. The tunnel was dangerously dark. Thin street lights streamed in through the metal grates overhead, and box lights hung at intervals down the tunnel walls. They weren't UVRs, weren't even fluorescents, just rectangles emanating a dull red glow. Beneath their feet, the floor wasn't solid. Gaps ran down the center and along the walls, the ground plunging away into darkness. August kicked a pebble over the side, and it fell for 3 solid seconds before landing with a splash.
What's down there?
Kate dug an HUV from her backpack and switched it on, angling the beam into the gap. Far below, a broad stretch of water slid past.
Looks like a river.
She tapped her foot on the concrete.
I think this used to be a bridge.
August started to say something, but Kate swung around, the beam tearing a single solitary line of compressed light through the tunnel. Her right ear registered nothing but white noise, but with her left she could make out the distant murmur of shadows, the scratch of claws on concrete, and the constant whisper. Judging by August's face, he heard it too.
Beat, break, ruin, flesh, blood, bone, beat, break.
There were rumors that the Corsi told secrets, that their nonsensical murmurings took shape right before they killed you. Others claimed they merely parroted the sins that made them, whispering atrocities, mimicking the gruesome sounds of metal against skin, breaking bones, muffled screams. Now wasn't the time to lose her nerve. Kate focused on her breathing, reminding herself that Corsi fed on fear. She faced the tunnel, flashlight burrowing away into black, and tried to focus her eyes on the center, the darkest point, as it began to to move.
I am the daughter of Callum Harker,
she called into the dark.
Harker, Harker, Harker,
it echoed.
And then the word was taken up and carried, and when it came back, it was different.
Not our Harker, Harker, Harker.
Kate shivered, fought the urge to take a step back. Her eyes still trained on the place where her light ended and the shadows took hold. Beside her, August was kneeling, clicking open his case.
Do you have another flashlight in there? She asked softly.
No, he said. But I have something better.
He held up the violin.
Besides, you said you wanted to hear me play.
She remembered the eerie chords, the way the Malkai had screeched and recoiled and covered their ears, the strange calm that settled over her like snow. Beyond them, the tunnel's red glow caught on teeth and claws, and the darkness began to churn.
Remember when I said this was a bad idea?
He muttered, fixing a strap to the case and swinging it over his shoulder. The good news, she said, gripping the light, is that I don't think they're going to tell Sloane we're here.
And the bad news?
Asked August, tucking the violin under his chin. Kate swung the flashlight in an arc, and there was a flutter, like wings, as the Corsi parted and reformed.
The bad news, she said, is I don't think they're very happy to see us.
She slashed again, and the beam must have finally connected with the creature's head because a single shadow screamed and toppled forward from the mass, white eyes winking out, teeth raining down on the damp floor like loose stones.
Any time now,
snapped Kate as the Corsi rattled and hissed.
Can't rush art, said August, as he rested the bow on the strings.
The darkness barreled toward them like a train, edges raking the air. But just as Kate faltered and took a step back, he finally began to play. A single resonant note swept through the tunnel, and everything stopped. Sound vibrated through the air as he drew a second sound, and then a third, the chords fusing together as they formed. The music was like a blade, knifing through the dark. The melody sang through her head, and the Corsi arced back as one, as if repelled by a single massive beam. They hissed like steam, and broke apart, and fell away beneath the music, and Kate could feel her thoughts begin to fall too, her head swimming with the notes the way it had at Colton. Now, in the darkness, she could see the music too. It threaded through the air like wisps of sunlight, ribbons of color that twisted and swirled and held the shadows at bay. She reeled, suddenly dizzy, and her feet dragged to a stop. She couldn't move, couldn't look away. Her senses tangled in the chords as the song filled her head, swallowed her sight. And then she looked down and saw that she was glowing too, a strange pale light rising to the surface of her skin. She marveled at it, at the way it moved when she did, danced like steam, even though it was beneath the surface. It was like silver and smoke, pulsing faintly in time with her heart. Was this her life? Was this her soul? In the distance, August's voice reached her, soft and fluid and woven through the music.
Come on, Kate!
The music faltered, fell away, leaving only the echoes as he reached for her arm, and in that moment she found enough sense to be afraid.
Don't,
she said, trying to pull away before he could steal her soul. She was too slow. But when his fingers closed around her wrist, nothing happened.
It's okay,
he said, his voice careful, taut.
I can't hurt you.
She looked down at the place where his skin met hers, the way the silver light seemed to bend around his fingers like a stream around a stone.
But you need to stay close.
He drew her hand to the edge of his coat and picked up the song before the last tendrils of music could fade from the air.
Follow me.
And the truth was, Kate probably would have followed him right over a cliff, as long as he kept playing. The words left his mouth and tangled with the music and became real, became truth. The two of them moved through the tunnel, the shifting center in a sphere of melody and light. Kate's mind sank.
She tried to swim to the surface, but it kept stretching out of reach. It was like the cusp between waking and sleep, where you couldn't hold on to your thoughts, couldn't hold on to anything. But she held on to him. The darkness thinned as they reached a station, the tunnel unfolding into an arch ceiling, a set of platforms. Tiles glittered like teeth as the light from August's song reflected off them. Castor Way, the sign flickered in the ghostly glow. They were heading northeast. The subway tunnels thinned and opened and thinned again as tracks merged and diverged and merged again. They passed a depot of darkened cars disabled until the morning shift. Kate wasn't sure how long the song lasted. She couldn't hold on to the minutes, felt herself say something, felt her mouth forming words, felt them spill out over her lips. But she couldn't hear her own voice, only the music. And if August heard her, he didn't respond, didn't turn. He kept his head forward, violin up and hands moving. This wasn't the boy from the bleachers or the one folded in on himself in her car. This wasn't the one coughing black blood onto the pavement or tied to the half-constructed wall. This was a different August Flynn. Confident, mesmerizing. And Kate felt her lips forming those words too. But she was cut off by a sharp twang as one of the violin strings broke. August faltered, his face flashing with panic. He started up again, and the melody returned, still entrancing. But there was something thinner about it. Fewer threads of light wove around them, and as the glow caught August's face, she saw a line of worry. And then, too soon, a second string broke. August caught his breath. Now the sound was noticeably weaker. She felt its presence retreating from her mind and had a feeling that was a bad sign. "August," she said, an edge of warning in her voice.
"I never play this long," he explained, eyes narrowed in focus. "My song needs all four strings."
She could see the strain on the final two, the place where the bow met the string pricking with light, like heat. The threads in the air were starting to dim, and the darkness, and the things that writhed inside, began to press forward. Up ahead, the tunnel opened onto another cavernous space. A shape glinted in the middle. Not eyes or teeth, but the metal corners of a train car. Something scratched the walls of the tunnel at Kate's back. The scritch, scritch cutting through August's faltering song. She didn't turn. She wouldn't turn. Seeing wouldn't help. It would only make it real.
"Kate,"
said August, right before the third string broke.
"Yeah?"
"Run."
Chapter 4. They ran, as fast as they could, the last tendrils of music and light trailing behind them like streamers, dissolving too quickly into the dark. The music had kept the Corsi at bay, but they were patient. They were waiting, and as soon as the song gave way, they were on them, surging forward in a mass of claws and teeth. August kept his eyes ahead, and Kate slashed with the flashlight, trying to keep them back as they raced for the subway car. They reached the door hand in hand moments before the first monsters reached them. August leaped up the steps, but Kate stumbled beside him, letting out a cry before he could haul her up. He threw his arms around her, shielding her body with his own as the Corsi hit the train car in a wave of "break, ruin, bone." They hissed and tore at the air, claws raking the steel, but they wouldn't touch August, so they couldn't reach Kate.
"The door!"
he shouted as a creature tried to tear the violin from his hands.
"Hurry!"
Kate was shaking and pale, but she twisted in his arms, curled her fingers around the door, and pulled. The metal slid sideways with a resistant groan. They tumbled in and tried to force it closed. A Corsi's clawed arm stretched through, but when August pressed his hand against the shadowed flesh, the thing recoiled as it burned, and the door ground shut. Kate and August stood in the darkened car, gasping for breath as the shadows swarmed outside, gnashing and throwing themselves against the plexiglass.
but the walls were striped with iron, and soon the monsters shrank back into the tunnel dark. Their scent lingered, a mix of ash and damp decay. Kate collapsed onto a bench seat.
"You were right," she said. "Worst plan ever."
"Told you," said August, sinking onto his knees. He examined the violin, wincing at the sight of the large scratch running down the wood. He dug around in the case until he found the pouch of new strings and set to work by the light of Kate's HUV beam.
"Why the violin?" she asked, her voice shaking.
August didn't look up. "Sunai use music to bring a soul to surface," he said, freeing the broken strings.
"I get that," she said.
"But why a violin? Can you use anything?" She drummed fingers on the subway seat.
"If you made a beat, would that count as music?"
August shook his head.
"Hold the light a little higher."
He hooked the first string and threaded it through the peg.
"We each have a song," he explained. "A piece of music that belongs only to us. Something we're born with, like a fingerprint."
He tightened the string.
"Leo can use almost anything to play his song. Guitar, piano, flute. But Ilsa's doesn't work with anything except her voice. And my song only comes out right when I use this."
He plucked at the one taut string.
"My sister thinks it's about beauty, that our music correlates to the first beautiful sound we heard. I heard a violin. She heard someone singing."
"And Leo?" August hesitated. By Ilsa's logic, Leo must have found beauty in everything. But he couldn't imagine his brother seeing the world as anything but broken, something to be fixed.
"Who knows?"
He worked in silence for a few moments, replacing the second and third strings.
"There's a big difference, you know," said Kate, "between can't and won't."
"What?" He glanced over. Even in the near-black car, she looked pale.
"When you took my hand, you told me not to worry. You didn't say you wouldn't hurt me. You said you couldn't."
August turned his attention back to the violin. This wasn't the time.
"I've seen footage," she continued, a strange tremor in her voice, "of Leo reaping. He touches people and takes their souls. But when you touched me, nothing happened."
"Why?" August hesitated, tightening the final string.
"We can only take the souls of those who've harmed others."
"I've harmed people," said Kate defensively, as if it were some kind of badge.
"Not like that."
"How do you know?"
"Because your shadow doesn't have a life of its own, and your soul doesn't glow red."
Kate went quiet for a few moments, then said,
"What do your tallies really stand for?"
August plucked each string, tuning it by ear.
"Days."
He returned the violin to its case, and Kate turned the flashlight off, plunging them both into the pale red glow of the box lights on the tunnel walls.
"Wouldn't want it to burn out," she whispered.
August didn't argue. He sat on the floor across from her, his back against the seat, and rubbed the tallies on his wrist. Even lost inside the song earlier, he'd felt the latest mark. A new day, a line of heat against his skin.
"How many?"
she asked.
422.
"Since what?" he swallowed.
"Since I last fell."
"What do you mean, fell?"
"It's what happens if Sunai stop feeding. They go dark. They lose the ability to tell the difference between good and bad, monster and human. They just kill. They kill everyone. It's not even about feeding when that happens. It's just..."
He trailed off with a shudder. He didn't say that every time Sunai went dark, they lost a piece of their souls, if they had souls, a part of what made them feel human. that every single time they fell, something didn't get back up.
What does it look like, pressed Kate, when you go dark?
I don't know, he said shortly. I can't exactly see myself.
But you said before that you'd rather die than let it happen again.
No hesitation.
Yes.
Kate's eyes danced in the low light.
How many times has it happened, August?
Her questions were easier to bear when he couldn't really see her.
Twice, he said. Once, when I was much younger, and then...
422 days ago, she finished for him.
So what happened?
August hesitated.
He didn't talk about it. He never talked about it.
There was no one to talk to. Henry and Emily didn't understand, couldn't understand, and Leo thought the soul was a distraction, had burned it away on purpose.
And Ilsa?
Well, the last time she went dark, she apparently took a chunk of V-City with her.
I stopped eating, he said at last. I didn't want to do it anymore. Didn't want to feel like a monster. Henry and I got into a fight and I stormed out. Spent most of the day wandering the city in a daze, stuck in my own head.
His eyes drifted shut as he remembered.
I was finally heading back when a fight broke out and I... You know when you're hungry and the smell of food is intoxicating? When you're famished and it's all you can think of? I could smell the blood on their hands, and then...
His voice wavered.
I remember feeling so empty. Like there was a black hole inside. Something I had to fill and couldn't, no matter how many people I killed.
The words left his throat raw, and his fingers shaking.
So yes, I'd rather die than face that again.
Kate had gone quiet. August dragged his eyes open.
What? No quip?
She was slumped on the bench, her eyes closed, and he thought for a second she'd just nodded off. But her arm, which had been crossed over her stomach, had fallen into her lap, and it was slick with something blackish and wet. Even in the dim car, he knew it was blood. Chapter 5 Kate. August scrambled over, knelt in front of her, and took her face in his hands.
Kate, wake up!
Where are you?
She murmured.
I'm right here.
No,
she mumbled.
Not how it works.
But she was already sliding back into unconsciousness.
I'm sorry,
he said, right before he squeezed her wounded shoulder. Her eyes flashed open as she let out a cry and kicked him in the chest. He stumbled backward, rubbing his ribs as she muttered,
I'm okay.
Why didn't you say anything? He asked, squinting to see the damage in the low light.
Kate shook her head and he couldn't tell if that was an answer or if she was trying to shake off the haze. He grabbed the flashlight.
Let me see,
he said, snapping it on, and then wishing he hadn't. Her stomach was slick with blood.
I'll be okay, she said.
But the words were dulled, and she didn't fight him as he guided her onto her back along the bench, only swore when he peeled the shirt up from her hip. He told himself the cussing was a good sign. It meant she was conscious. But when he saw the wound, he still cringed. 2 razor-sharp gashes, claw marks, ran from the curve of her ribs to her navel. They hadn't torn anything vital, but the cuts were deep and she'd lost a lot of blood.
Listen to me, he said, pulling off his coat. You need to stay awake.
She almost laughed, a shallow chuckle cut short by pain. He tore the lining from the Colton jacket.
What's so funny?
You're a really shitty monster, August Flynn. He pressed the lining against Kate's stomach, eliciting another string of curses. Then he got up and scoured the car for an emergency kit.
Talk to me, Kate, he said, searching. Where are you?
She swallowed, then said,
On a lake.
I've never been to a lake.
He found a first aid box mounted behind a set of benches on the back wall and, returning with some disinfectant spray and some gauze, knelt beside her.
Tell me what it's like.
Sunny, she said sleepily. The boat is rocking and the water's warm and blue and full of... She hissed at the disinfectant. Fish.
You need stitches,
he said, cinching the gauze around the wound.
No problem, she said, a fresh edge in her voice. We can just pop up to street level and over to the nearest hospital. I'm sure no one will notice that Kate Harker and a Sunai... Oh!
She cut off as August put pressure on her stomach.
We don't need a hospital, he said calmly. But we do need a suture kit. If you think I'm letting you near me with a needle and thread, my father is a surgeon. Stop calling him that, she snapped, leveraging herself up to a sitting position with a hiss. He's not your father. He's a human, and you're a monster working for him. August went still.
What?
Nothing to say now? Oh, that's right. You can't tell lies. Henry Flynn is my family, he snarled. And I'm willing to bet he's been a better father than yours. Fuck off. Kate slumped back, breathing through gritted teeth. Why would you even want to be human? We're fragile. We die. You also live. You don't spend every day wondering why you exist, but don't feel real. Why you look human, but can't be. You don't do everything you can to be a good person, only to have it constantly thrown in your face that you're not a person at all. He stopped, breathless. Kate looked at him hard. He waited, gave her a chance to speak, but she didn't. He shook his head, turned away. August, she started. And then a loud hum filled the air. Electricity crackled through the tunnels, and Kate and August both looked up sharply as the power was reconnected, and the lights in the subway car flickered and came on. Oh, no, said August at the same time Kate said, Finally!
She looked paler in the full light of the car, the blood a violent red where it dotted the metal floor and streaked the bench.
We have to go, said August, getting to his feet. Now.
He pointed up when he said it, and Kate looked at the ceiling and noticed the series of small red dots. Surveillance cameras.
Shit,
she muttered, hauling herself to her feet with the help of a pole. She let out a hiss of pain, and August started back toward her, but she cut him off.
Just get the door.
He slung the violin onto his shoulder and pried the train door open. The tunnel beyond wasn't fully lit, but bands of UVR light now ran like tracery down the length of the walls, and the Corsi were gone. August offered Kate a hand down from the train car, but she didn't take it, and he had to catch her arm when she landed and nearly fell. She shook him off and started down the tunnel toward the nearest station, careful to keep her feet on the wood between the rails. August picked his way behind her, ears tuned for the sound of moving trains. But the service clearly hadn't started yet. Or if it had, it hadn't reached them. Where were they? How far had they made it in the night? Not to the end of the line, that much was clear, but he could hear the pulse of the city fading with every step. They reached the nearest station and climbed off the tracks and onto the platform. Kate finally let him help, as the grates across the subway doors above began to grind open and people spilled in. They were the only ones moving up the stairs instead of down, and August looped his arm gingerly around her, remembering the way they'd knitted together the night before, turning themselves from two people into a couple. But it felt different now, with Kate leaning into him a little too hard, his jacket pulled tight around her, and his blood-stained hand shoved in the pocket, and he felt the eyes lingering instead of sliding off. People shook rain from their coats and folded their umbrellas as they descended from the street, and August nicked one from a newsstand near the base of the steps, opening it over them as they climbed the stairs toward the promise of morning light. As soon as they reached the surface, August stopped. Buildings rose around them, but they weren't the massive skyscrapers that filled the red. These were shorter, shoulder to shoulder, but squat enough that they could see the sky over the rooftops. There were even trees here and there. Not massive stretches like at Colton, but a row along the street, each with its own little fence. The city center carved its outline in the distance, and from here, north and south didn't look so different. He couldn't see the seam. Kate shivered against him, and August dragged his attention back, eyes lighting on a pharmacy across the street.
"Stay here," he said, passing her the umbrella.
She offered a weak nod, but said nothing. He held his hands out in the rain, rinsing off as much of the blood as he could before he went inside. He dug a handful of folded bills from his pocket. He didn't carry much, only what Henry made him keep on hand in case of emergency, and made his way up and down the aisles, avoiding the gaze of the security cameras as he grabbed a suture kit, antiseptic, painkillers, adhesive strips. His fingers itched to call his father, to let Henry know he was all right, that he was trying to help. But what if Leo answered? Or worse, what if his brother was on his way? What would he do if he found Kate?
"There's a clinic down the road," said the woman behind the counter.
August looked up.
"What?"
She nodded at the supplies, and he realized how obvious they were. He should have added other things to make it all look less suspicious, but he didn't have much cash. He fumbled for a version of the truth.
"Friend took a fall," he said. "Doesn't want her family to find out."
The woman nodded absently and bagged the supplies. "Overprotective?"
"Something like that."
August paid and pulled up his collar as he headed back out into the rain. He looked up, expecting to see Kate waiting beside the subway entrance where he'd left her. But she wasn't there.
"No, no, no,"
murmured August as he jogged across the street, holding his breath until he reached the exact place she'd been, as if that would somehow make her reappear. The puddle at his feet was stained red. Rain soaked into his hair and dripped from his case as he spun in a circle, resisting the urge to call out her name. Umbrellas swirled around him as people came and went. And then, at last, he saw her, standing beneath an awning down the block. Relief washed over him. The force of it caught him off guard.
"I thought you'd left,"
he said, jogging over. Kate gave him a long look and said,
"I thought about it,"
before her eyes went to the bag of supplies in his hand.
"But this sounds like so much fun."
Chapter 6 They walked 3 blocks to a motel, the kind you paid for by the hour, and used the majority of Kate's cash to pay for a room. The place claimed it wasn't linked to Harker's feeds, only a closed loop for security purposes, and the man at the front desk gave her a seedy smile as he handed her 2 keys.
"This place is dirtier than the subway," said Kate, lowering herself onto the edge of the bed while August laid out the medical supplies.
She thought of yesterday morning before school, the way she'd laid out the zip ties and duct tape and iron spikes. How had it only been a day?
"Do you really know what you're doing?" she asked when he tore open the suture kit.
And then when he started to answer, she held up her hand.
"Flynn, surgeon, got it."
He tossed her a bottle of painkillers and she swallowed 3 dry, then peeled off the jacket and shirt. August didn't even try to sneak a glance as he pulled on a pair of plastic gloves. She should have known he wasn't human. The tooth marks on her shoulder weren't deep, but the gashes across her stomach were angry and red. Kate lay back, wincing as August cleaned the cuts and sprayed the area with a numbing agent. She drew a steadying breath as he took up the needle.
"I'm sorry," he said softly. "I'll try to be quick."
"Wait," she dug the pack of cigarettes out of her bag. The package was a little soggy, but they still lit. August shook his head.
"Of all the ways to die,
I'll be lucky if I live long enough for these to be a problem." She put the cigarette between her lips and took a drag.
"Okay, let's do this."
The whole thing hurt like hell, but Kate had to hand it to August. He was careful, gentle, as gentle as someone could be when they were stabbing you with a needle and thread. But he obviously wasn't trying to hurt her. If anything, he seemed put off by the whole thing. Great. A squeamish monster. Go figure. But halfway through, Kate felt her resolve failing. The room was too quiet and the pain too sharp, and before she knew it, she was talking. She didn't know why, but the words just started coming and she didn't stop them. "I grew up with stories of my father," she said, trying to keep still. "That's all he was, really, for years. A good story. But I wanted him to be real. Mom made him sound so strong, invincible, and I could barely remember him myself. I was so young when we left the city. So over time, all I wanted was to see him again. To be a family again." She winced, continued. "And then we finally came back to V-City, and it was all wrong. None of it was like the stories. Dad was never around, and when he was, it was like he was a stranger. Like we were strangers in his house. Mom couldn't take it." "The night she died," continued Kate, "she dragged me out of bed. Her mouth was too red and she'd been crying."
"Get up, Kate. We have to go."
"Where are we going?"
"Home."
She kept looking back, but no one stopped us. Not when we snuck through the penthouse, not when she took the car, not when the city blurred past.
"He's going to be mad, Mom."
"Don't worry, Kate. It's going to be okay. Sit back, close your eyes. Tell me where you are." It was her favorite game, a way to turn where you were into where you wanted to be. "Go on, Kate. Close your eyes." She squeezed her eyes shut, but before she could come up with a place, she heard the scritch of claws on metal, saw the sudden flash of headlights, the horrible shift of gravity before the crash, the deafening screech of metal and tires and breaking glass, and then silence. Her mother's face, cheek against the wheel, and in the glass behind her mother's head, the fractured light of two red eyes. Kate gasped and tried to sit up.
I'm sorry, said August, a hand against her good shoulder. It's over. I'm done.
No. No. What had... Kate scrambled for the memory, but it was already falling apart. It was like waking up too fast, the dream crumbling before you could grab the threads. She'd seen something. Something, but she couldn't catch it. The pieces were broken again. Her bad ear was ringing.
What was I saying?
She asked, trying to shake off the strange panic. August looked down, embarrassed.
I'm sorry.
Her head spun.
For what?
I can't control it, he said.
Trust me, if I could...
What are you talking about? August ran a hand through his black hair.
It's just something that happens around me. Around us. People open up. They tell the truth, whether they realize it's happening or not.
Kate blanched. What did I say? He hesitated.
I tried to tune most of it out.
How considerate, she growled.
You really should have told me about this up front.
One dark brow twitched up.
Well, it's only fair. I can't lie to anyone.
He turned his attention back to her stomach.
You're going to have scars, he said,
pressing an adhesive over the stitches.
Not my first, said Kate.
She looked down at the lines of white tape tracing lines across her stomach.
Your father would be proud.
August winced a little. How does a surgeon end up running South City?
His whole family dies.
An uncomfortable silence, and then August said,
What about your father? Any word?
Kate looked at the cell. There were a handful of messages, all for someone named Tess, who was probably the girl she'd stolen the phone from back in the restaurant bathroom. She hadn't stopped to get her name.
Not yet, said Kate,
deleting the texts. They both knew that was a bad sign. Harker should have seen the message, should have known it was her, should have called by now. She tried a second time while August was in the pharmacy. Now she tried a third. She tried to draw a deep breath and winced. She was still waiting for the pain to blur into a blanket, something she could ignore. Or for the comforting numbness of adrenaline and shock. So far, no luck. Her stomach began to ache in a different, hollow way. "You didn't pick up any food in that pharmacy, did you?" August frowned. It obviously hadn't occurred to him. Of course, he didn't eat food. Only souls. And maybe it was the pain, or the blood loss, or the exhaustion. But Kate started to laugh. It hurt. God, it hurt. But she couldn't help it.
"What's so funny?" asked August, pushing to his feet.
What's a Sunai's favorite food?
What?
Soul food.
August just stared at her.
Get it? Because...
I get it, he said flatly.
Oh, come on, it's funny.
He just shook his head, but she saw the edge of his mouth twitch as he turned to go.
How often do you, you know, eat?
She asked. And just like that, the smile was gone.
When I need to,
he said, in a way that made it very clear he didn't want to talk about it. He rattled the change in his pocket.
I'll go see if there's a vending machine.
The moment he was gone, the cell phone rang. August stood in the alcove, staring at the vending machine, his vision unfocused and refocused, and this time instead of the shelves of packaged processed foods, he saw his reflection in the glass. You are not a monster. He ran a hand through his hair, trying to push the damp curls out of his face. He's not your father, August. He's a human. His rain-slick shirt clung to his narrow frame, the sleeves pushed up to the elbows, black tally spilling down his left forearm.
422.
He leaned his forehead against the glass and closed his eyes, fatigue washing over him. He wanted to go home, wanted to take Allegro into his arms and sit on Ilsa's floor and look at stars. What were they doing? What was he doing? Maybe they should have gone south. Maybe they still could.
Did it eat your money?
Asked an old man. August straightened.
No, he said wearily. Just trying to decide.
He fed coins into the groove, punching numbers at random, and collected the contents from the bottom drawer. And then, just as he was turning back toward the room, he saw it. A payphone. It was mounted to the wall, one of those old-fashioned machines that took coins. He looked down, considering the last of the loose change in his palm. He didn't even know if it would be enough. August picked up the receiver, listened to the empty tone, like white noise in his ears. He wanted to call Henry, wanted to know that he was doing the right thing. But what if Leo answered? Or worse, what if Henry told him to abandon Kate, to let Harker's monsters have her? No, he couldn't do that. She was an innocent. He was a Sunai. He was supposed to make the world better, not worse, and wasn't letting someone die just as bad as killing them? Henry would understand, and Leo... August put the receiver back.
Catherine, is that you?
She was caught off guard by the urgency in Harker's voice. His usual calm had splintered and he sounded worried.
Dad,
it was the only word that came out.
Thank God.
An audible exhale, like a wave breaking.
Are you all right?
Her voice wavered and she clutched the silver pendant around her neck.
Yeah.
What happened? Where are you?
He was actually raising his voice. Her father never raised his voice.
There was an attack yesterday, she said, trying to stay calm, focused.
At Colton. I know.
I've been trying to reach you ever since I heard. 4 students and a teacher dead, along with 2 of my Maokai. It looks like one of Flynn's.
No, Kate cut in. They weren't your Maokai. They'd clawed off their brands. And it wasn't a Sunai. It was a setup.
Silence.
Then, you're certain?
They were after me, she said. Dad, they brought a blowtorch for my eyes.
But you got away,
he said. And there was something in his voice, surprise or grudging respect.
Are you alone?
Kate hesitated, eyes flicking to August's violin case against the chair. Yes.
Where are you? I'm sending a car.
Kate rolled her head on her shoulders. No.
Catherine, wherever you are, it isn't safe.
It isn't safe there either. An exhale, a beat of silence. She could hear the words he wasn't saying.
I should never have brought you back. I should have kept you away.
She swallowed. Where is Sloane?
He's out. Why?
Challenged Harker. Someone tried to have me killed, Dad. Someone tried to break the truce, and that someone had enough power to bend other Maokai to his will.
And logically, Sloane has always been loyal.
Confront him if you're so sure, she said icily. Silence again. When Harker spoke, his tone was careful.
You're right. It isn't safe here. You need to get out of the city until the problem is solved. Do you remember the coordinates?
She stiffened. Yes.
I'll call when I know more.
Her fingers tightened on the cell. Okay.
I promise, Catherine. The problem will be solved.
I killed them, she said, before he could hang up. The Maokai at Colton? It drove my spikes into their hearts, and when you find the monster behind this, I want to be the one to kill him too. Even if it's Sloane. Especially if it's Sloane. A single word in answer.
Done.
And then he was gone. It was the most she'd spoken to her father in 5 years. Kate stayed on the line and listened to the silence until August came back. August stood at the hotel window, watching the sun arc over the city skyline. The rain had stopped, the clouds broken from a solid pane of gray into 100 slivers, blue shining through. Kate had burned through the last of her cigarettes, and when he refused to buy her more, she'd stretched out on the bed and stared up at nothing, turning her silver pendant over in her fingers. She said she had to get out of the city. She didn't say where she was going, only pushed herself up from the bed and nearly tore her stitches when she fell. Between the blood loss and the painkillers and the lack of sleep, she wasn't fit to go anywhere right now. One night, he told her. They'd paid for the room. She could leave in the morning. She, as if August was just supposed to walk away. That's what Leo wanted him to do. That's what Henry would probably tell him to do, if he actually phoned home. You should get going, said Kate, as if she could read his mind. With his luck, it was probably the only thing written on his face.
Yeah,
said August, sinking into a chair.
I probably should.
I'm serious, she said, the faintest tremor in her voice. Go, while it's still light out.
I'm not leaving you,
he said. What if I don't want you to stay? She asked, which wasn't the same thing as asking him to go.
Too bad, said August. I'm not staying just for you. Whoever's behind this, they tried to frame my family. Do you have any idea what will happen if this truce breaks? If the city's plunged back into territory war?
People will die, she said hollowly.
People will die,
he echoed, thinking of Ilsa. Ilsa in her room, surrounded by stars. Ilsa in the Baron, surrounded by ghosts. People are already dying, muttered Kate. But she didn't talk any more about him leaving, only sank back against the cushions and returned her attention to the silver pendant. August shivered,
his clothes still damp with rain. He turned away and felt Kate's eyes on his back as he stripped the shirt over his head, revealing the black tallies that had circled his forearm and were making their way like roots ac-